maintaining their distance but capturing the incident on camera. The spectacle had attracted a few other people by then, and they all studied the man as if his contortions and moans were simply a bizarre piece of performance art. "He's an extreme case," someone said. "I've never seen that degree of asymmetry. Do you think we're far enough away from him?"
"You'll find out eventually."
The man was still thrashing stiffly on the ground when the brigade arrived from inside the plaza. They couldn't have had far to travel. It was a detachment of armored technicians, propelling a cumbersome machine which resembled an extremely large, open-fronted palanquin, marked with bas-relief biohazard symbols. Oblivious to their presence, the plague victim kept clawing at the fuel even as they pushed the humming machine over him and lowered a door over its front. The technicians moved with clinical speed, communicating with precise hand gestures and whispers as their machine thumped and hummed. The party watched wordlessly. No sign now of the dream fuel or the devices they'd been using to administer it. Then the technicians propelled their machine backwards, leaving only polished ground behind, one of them sweeping the area with something that looked like a cross between a broom and a mine detector. After a few sweeps, he gave a thumbs-up signal to his colleagues and followed them back into the plaza, behind the still-humming machine. The party lingered, but the incident had obviously taken the shine off their immediate plans for the night. Before very long, they'd all vanished into a pair of private cable cars, and I'd had no chance to insinuate myself. But I noticed something on the ground, near where the moon-faced man had been standing. At first I thought it was another vial of dream fuel, but as I moved closer, before anyone else saw it, I realized that it was an experiential. It had probably fallen out of his pocket when he retrieved his cachet of fuel. I knelt down and picked it up. It was slim and black, and the only marking on it was a tiny silver maggot near the top. With Vadim, I'd found a similar set of experientials at the same time that I'd found his supply of dream fuel.
"Tana Mirabel."
The voice held only the slightest hint of curiosity. I looked around, because the voice had come from behind me. The man who'd spoken was dressed in a dark coat, making the minimum necessary concession to canopy fashion. His face was unsmiling and grey, like an undertaker on a bad day. There was also a martial tautness to his posture, evinced in the way the muscles in his neck were rigidly defined. Not a man to be trifled with, whoever he was. He spoke softly, hardly moving his lips now that he had my complete attention.
"I am a professional security specialist," he said. "I am armed with a neurotoxic weapon which can kill you in under 3 seconds, silently, and without drawing the slightest attention to myself. You would not even have time to blink in my direction."
"Well, enough pleasantries," I said. "You recognize that I am a professional," the man said, nodding to emphasize his words. "Like you, I have been trained to kill in the most efficient manner possible. I hope that gives us some common ground and that we can now discuss matters reasonably. I don't know who you are or what you want."
"You don't have to know who I am. Even if I told you, I'd be forced to lie, and what would be the point of that?"
"Fair point."
"Good. In which case, my name's Pransky. As for the other matter, that's easier. I'm here to escort you to someone who wants to meet you."
"What if I don't want to be escorted?"
"That's entirely your choice."
He still spoke calmly and quietly, like a young monk reciting his breviary.
"But you will have to satisfy yourself that you can absorb a dose of tetrodotoxin of sufficient potency to kill 20 people. Of course, it's entirely possible that your membrane biochemistry is unlike that of any